You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
It's Wednesday, October 18th. Someone bombed a hospital and isn't admitting it. We start here. An explosion in Gaza rocks the Middle East.
We hold Israel responsible for this massacre, this crime.
President Biden's visit to Israel is still happening today, but this has upended everything on the agenda. Call it the revenge of the Republican moderates.
It is becoming a true embarrassment for Republicans.
Is the latest bid for Speaker going the same way as the others? And as one war begins, another takes a turn.
Ukrainians have hit two Russian air bases in occupied areas of Ukraine.
Ukraine says an American-made missile might be an inflection point. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. President Biden knew he was flying into a volatile situation. We told you yesterday that when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu invited the U.S. president to Israel, Biden would have to do this delicate dance where he's showing support for Israel while using every diplomatic tool possible to lower the temperature in the Middle East. There's a difference between Israel going to war with Hamas and wars breaking out all over involving Lebanon or Iran. Well, as Biden committed to going, this conflict ratcheted up another level.
The Gaza Health Ministry says at least 500 people have been killed, patients and civilians seeking shelter.
Yesterday afternoon, an explosion went off at a Gaza hospital. And in any part of the world, a hospital being hit is horrific. At this moment in Gaza, it's the stuff of nightmares. Because, first of all, you got wards absolutely chock full of victims of other blasts. Secondly, in a place where missiles are raining down, there are no safe spaces, a hospital's about as safe as you can get. And because people assumed it would never be targeted, families have been camping out at their local hospitals.
In the stairwells, in the corridors, in the wards between the patient beds.
So as videos like this began circulating online, the anger kicked up even higher than it had been and made this trip by Biden even more loaded than before.
We as an Arab group demand immediately a ceasefire.
To the point where now a trip to meet with Israelis and Arab leaders will no longer include Arab leaders. We start the day with ABC's Matt Gutman, who's back with us from Tel Aviv, where the president is meeting Netanyahu. Matt, first off, though, this hospital blast in Gaza, I mean, was it a strike? Was it Israel? What happened here?
We don't know yet. Hamas and the Palestinian organizations in Gaza say that it was an Israeli airstrike that just devastated the Ahli Arab hospital in the western part and southern part of Gaza.
We hold Israel responsible for this massacre, this crime, and those responsible for this crime should face justice.
And it's also believed that in addition to hundreds killed and many, many hundreds wounded, there may be additional hundreds trapped in the rubble beneath that hospital. There's only one major hospital left in Gaza City right now, and it was already overwhelmed. It's unclear how they're going to be able to cope with the influx of even more casualties.
This is the responsibility of Islamic Jihad.
And the Israeli military has said it was not us, and categorically so, and they came out very quickly.
I can confirm that an analysis of the IDF operational systems indicates that a barrage of rockets was fired by terrorists in Gaza, passing in close proximity to the El Hali El Mahdi hospital in Gaza at the time it was hit.
They put out videos to try to show that it was what they're calling an Islamic Jihad rocket. Islamic Jihad is a militant organization in Gaza that often aligns with Hamas. Hmm. And they showed video that seems to show that a rocket goes up and then it goes down and then there's this boom and it's right in the area of the hospital. None of this is confirmed. We cannot independently confirm it. All we know for sure is that there was this massive explosion at this hospital that there are many hundreds of casualties, and that Hamas and groups in Gaza blame Israel, and Israel is categorically saying it was not us. this was a backfired rocket that dropped back down into Gaza as it was on its way to Israel.
And I mean, at this point, when this happened, Biden was almost on the plane, Matt. Like they were making their final preparations for getting him off to Israel. How has this affected his visit to Israel today?
It changed the whole tenor of the mood here. He was going to come probably to tell Prime Minister Netanyahu, you know, some instructions that the United States backs an Israeli operation in the Gaza Strip, but lawfully. And I think that's what President Biden said in his speech last week. Israel's got to do this lawfully.
Democracies like Israel and the United States are stronger and more secure when we act according to the rule of law.
And he was going to try to cement that in their conversation. But now, Brad, we are seeing protests and riots erupt in Arab capitals all over the Middle East, attacking embassies of France and the U.S.
Resistance is the only path for Palestinians. There is no other solution for Palestine.
This is not the kind of Middle East that President Biden had hoped to be landing in today.
Yeah, and this trip was supposed to have two legs, right? Like, there's the visit to Israel, which is still happening, but then also a trip to Jordan to meet with multiple Arab leaders, right? Like Jordan, Egypt, the leader of the Palestinians, Mahmoud Abbas was going to be there. Abbas went home. The Jordanians say they've canceled. I mean, what should we take from that?
That they are apoplectic about what happened in Gaza.
As you see, all of us united, outraged by this massacre that has taken place.
And that they cannot be seen as supporting President Biden, who supports Israel in any way, shape, or form, right? Mm. They have their own constituents to deal with in the West Bank, where Mahmoud Abbas controls with the Palestinian Authority. They've declared 3 days of mourning. And in many ways, it's a protest to the U.S. support of Israel, right? This is a way that they can show that they are not pleased with this full and robust backing that President Biden has given Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli military in its campaign in Gaza right now, despite the horrors that happened, which are just, you know, beyond comprehension.
Hey, Matt, here's what I'm left wondering, though, after you mentioned, like, we still don't know. Was this Israel? Was this other militant, like, offshoot? Was it friendly fire? If we find out that's what it was, that it was never actually the Israelis who did this, does that change any of their reaction today or going forward?
Israel may very well be able to prove that it was an Islamic Jihad rocket that landed inside of Gaza. I don't think it matters anymore, especially not in the Arab world.
I have only one question. We as civilians, where are we supposed to go? We went to schools, they bombed schools. We went to the south, they bombed the south. We went to hospitals, they bombed the hospitals. It's a massacre.
No one will believe what Israel says, given the bad blood. And now it's cemented in everybody's minds that Israel committed this most horrific of atrocities, they say, in this hospital of all places in the Gaza Strip.
Like, that's now ironed into the narrative as Biden is there in Israel. Matt Gutman, what a wild turn of events in the last 24 hours. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, if he thought he had the votes, they'd still be voting for Speaker right now. A Washington debacle after the break.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Jim Jordan could practically feel the speaker's gavel in his hands. Remember, in a recent closed-door vote just among Republicans in Congress, Steve Scalise from Louisiana won the nomination. Jim Jordan from Ohio finished second. And everyone said, okay, that's that. Republicans now just need to band together, support one guy in the actual floor vote. But that didn't happen.
It's much bigger than me, and it's much bigger than anybody else. And nobody's going to use me as an excuse to hold back our ability to get the House opened again.
A bunch of Jordan allies refused to vote for Scalise. He dropped out. Well, now Jordan must have figured it's my turn. Only yesterday, when they held this official vote on the House floor, Jordan couldn't get the votes either, leaving us in some sort of limbo. Let's go to ABC's political director, Rick Klein. Rick, what happened here? Like, why does this keep seeming to happen over and over?
Yeah, it is a deja vu, another time where they just can't get anything done. It was so interesting, Brad, because we go into the day, and it's all about math, and politicians aren't necessarily good at math, but in this case, they knew that it was pretty simple. When you counted all the members of the House who were there on the floor on Tuesday, we knew that Jim Jordan could afford to lose three Republicans. If you lose more than three Republicans, well, he doesn't have the magic number. You go back to the drawing board. And we came into the day with some momentum for Jim Jordan.
On behalf of the House Republican Conference, I rise today to nominate the gentleman from Ohio, Jim Jordan, as Speaker of the People's House.
A bunch of committee chairmen and some kind of old guard Republicans said, you know what, I'm on board, which is itself astounding. A lot of folks thought that Jim Jordan could never be their guy. But we watched this roll call play out, and it's an unusual one because every member of the House gets called by name alphabetically.
The reading clerk will now call the roll.
Adams. Jeffries.
So you start going through the A's and the B's, and before you know it, there's a couple of surprises. Well, wait a second. That guy decided not to vote. This person is supporting Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise.
Bacon.
McCarthy.
All of a sudden, these names start piling up, and I don't know, before we got to like the D's or the E's, suddenly we were in a situation where it was clear Jim Jordan wasn't going to get the votes. Mm. And then it kind of has a cascading effect.
La Loda. Zeldin.
And before the voting was done, we ended up with 20 Republicans who voted for someone other than Jim Jordan, an astounding number, way more than anyone thought. And it means that Jordan is truly nowhere close to becoming the House Speaker. In fact, some perspective on this, 8 Republicans joined with all the Democrats to oust Kevin McCarthy 2 weeks ago. So well more than twice that number say we don't actually like the guy that's been the handpicked selection to replace him.
Well, and then I remember Kevin McCarthy, right? Like, you can do multiple votes for Speaker,
yeah,
right? Like, you can just keep on voting, and you hope that people come over to your side. People thought there would be another vote last night, and then they were like, actually, no, maybe we'll hold votes later today. Is that a bad sign for Jim Jordan, that they don't feel comfortable just voting again and again?
Well, it's a terrible sign. You start with the fact that Jordan and his allies were engaged in some real hardball tactics, and their message was unmistakable to Republicans. Get on the train now before it runs you over.
You can't open the House and do the work of the American people and help our dearest and closest friend Israel if you don't have a speaker.
And that means you don't want to be the last one on board for a Jim Jordan speakership, because when he's the speaker, you're not going to get your stuff. And there was this major campaign going on inside the House chamber and well outside it.
They are the majority. They need to act like it. No deals with the Democrats, and that would mean, no temporary solutions either.
Sean Hannity, Steve Bannon, these major figures in right-wing media were saying, go get this done for Jim Jordan, with the unmistakable threat that, you know, we're going to primary you if you don't get it done. And that was looming over all of the talk. And a lot of people, I think, came into the day thinking, you know, Jordan's going to get it just by force of sheer will.
Will you be Speaker by the end of the day?
I hope so.
Do you have enough votes?
We're going to find out here pretty soon.
That a lot of the moderates are going to cave. They're not going to hold up the business of the House any longer. And they kind of played it fast. They went to the floor not knowing whether they had the votes, but hoping that it would kind of take on a life of its own.
No person having received a majority of the whole number of votes cast by surname, a speaker has not been elected.
But then when the opposite happens, it has a different impact. And yes, initially Jordan said, we're going to go back there, we're going to vote again. Well, it was clear to him that he was probably going to get fewer votes the second time, because there are members who say, yeah, I'm with you on the first vote, not necessarily the second vote. And critically, Steve Scalise, who, of course, was in line to become Speaker until Jordan's threat made it clear that Scalise couldn't get the votes, Scalise really wasn't willing to pick up a finger for Jim Jordan. And so that left Jordan and his allies in a position where if they went to the floor, it would only erode support. And once you start moving in the wrong direction in this chaotic time, it becomes really hard. Think about these members. They have to go back and explain, I didn't vote for Jim Jordan the first or the second time because of X, Y, and Z, but then I decided to do it later on. When Jordan himself carries so much baggage, including his efforts to help overturn the election, his efforts on January 6th and beyond as a staunch Trump supporter.
How do you incite a breach of the Capitol when it was already pre-planned?
A member to in a marginal district, in a close district, to have to explain why you weren't for Jordan and then you were, that becomes really hard. And now these members are locked in. Once you're down on the record as having voted for someone else, it gets really hard to flip you.
Wow, that's wild that the sort of the hardball tactics of you better vote for me or else turns into everyone else going, all right, let's see what else is out there. But Rick, what do you do then? Like, do you just keep holding votes for different people every day, a different republic? Like, do you tape a gavel under the chairs and do a lottery system? What happens now?
Yeah, look, it's very possible that other names emerge, that there's someone else comes forward. Maybe Jim Jordan is able to get the votes. But with every passing day, I think other scenarios become more likely. At the end of the day, the Democrats were together. They had all 212 of the Democrats voting for Hakeem Jeffries. There's a chance, even if it's a slim one, that they end up working with a small number of Republicans to get a speaker of their choosing, either a Democrat or a Republican. I think more likely than that, Brad, is you're going to see some momentum behind the idea of kind of empowering the temporary speaker, the speaker pro tem. This is Patrick McHenry from North Carolina. He was the handpicked selection by Kevin McCarthy to replace him if there was a vacancy. Now, that was intended as a response to an act of terrorism or a sudden death of some sort. No one really anticipated this, but McHenry has had the job of Speaker Pro Tem for the last 2 weeks. And that basically means he can just keep the lights on, keep the rules of the House functioning, keep the committees processing. It isn't at all clear that he has the power to bring legislation to the floor or act as an actual speaker of the House. But that can change. You've got to tweak the rules, and you probably have to get the Democrats to go along with it. But the House could have a speaker who's the guy that right now has the gavel for at least some period of time, because it is becoming a true embarrassment for Republicans to have gone through those 15 votes back in January before they got a speaker, and then 2 weeks ago, having a small number of their ranks helped oust their speaker, to not have anyone in place for this extended period of time with everything going on in the world is just truly embarrassing and utterly harmful, with a government shutdown just a month away. So I think you're going to see some more people start to talk about, let's give the guy that's got the job now a little more power to at least get us through the next couple of weeks or months.
Wow, unprecedented, like you said. All right, Rick Klein there in Washington, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Brad.
Now, something that's become easy to forget in the last week is that yesterday marked day 600 of Russia's full-fledged invasion of Ukraine. And even 600 days in, this war is as dynamic as ever. In fact, yesterday, Ukraine did something it hasn't done at any point in this conflict. Let's go to ABC's foreign correspondent, Tom Sufi Burge. Tom, what is happening here?
Overnight, Brad, Ukrainian forces appear to have struck deep inside Russian-occupied territory. Two Russian air bases, both up in the northeast and right down on the southern coast, about 100 miles away from the Ukrainian front lines. And these air bases, these attacks, we believe have been hit using TACAMs. These are long-range American missiles supplied by the Biden administration. We had a sense that they were coming, but this is the first time that they've been used in anger, we believe, according to President Zelensky of Ukraine. And the Ukrainians have hit two Russian air bases in occupied areas of Ukraine. And what we're hearing is quite significant. The Ukrainians are claiming they've destroyed 9 Russian attack helicopters. These are the type of helicopters which Ukrainian commanders have been telling us that are feared on the battlefield. They are lethal for Ukrainian ground forces during their counteroffensive throughout the summer. And, you know, the Ukrainians seem to have put a real dent in Russian air power, which has been a massive, massive problem for Ukrainian forces over the summer in the last few weeks when they've been trying to advance and not having much success.
Hey, these are American-made missiles, you said. How big of a game changer would they be? And why is the U.S. providing them to Ukraine now?
Yeah, well, they've got a range, depending on what type of ATACMS, depending which version, they've got a range of up to 190 miles. Now, that is way beyond. It's about four times the range of the missiles provided by the U.S. So far, which are fired by the HIMARS rocket launchers, which were earlier in the war massively, massively influential and helped turn the tide against Russia in Ukraine's favor earlier in the war. So the ATACMS are really kind of significant because they basically mean that almost any area of Russian-occupied Ukraine is within range of these Ukrainian missiles, which the Ukrainians now have. What's also interesting is that the Ukrainians have been telling us that they've been pleading with the Biden administration for more than a year for the US to provide these missiles. And it's taken a long time for President Biden to actually be swayed and to move round to actually providing them. One reason potentially is that the US didn't have many of these missiles in its stocks. And the second reason is that President Biden, we've been told, was just fearful that the ATACMS would be seen by Russia as a red line and that it was possible, it was thought, that Ukraine might use them to attack inside Russia.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is the difference between these missiles and the other missiles they've already got, like, these might give you the ability to strike into the Russian homeland if you wanted to, right? Like, that seems like the difference. Is that how Ukraine might use them?
On the one hand, Russia has a border with Ukraine, right? So, I mean, Ukraine can use all types of weaponry to fire into Russia very easily. So in a way, that argument, I mean, didn't make a huge amount of sense to me, if I'm honest, you know, having been to Ukraine a million times and having lived there as well. I mean, you go to Kharkiv, the second biggest city. I mean, you used to be able to drive up to the Russian border in like 30 minutes from the city. Also, Ukrainian generals were telling us that they were talking to their US counterparts and saying, look, we promise, if you provide these weapons, we will use them solely to strike Russian targets in our own territory, which has been occupied by Russia. We will definitely not use them. And officials were almost saying to me, look, this argument is nonsense. Ukrainian officials were saying, this is nonsense. We're not going to use these weapons to strike inside Russia. We purely need them to take back our own territory, which has been occupied by Russia. We need them for the counteroffensive. And I think now it's interesting that they're now being used in anger by the Ukrainians to such lethal effect as we've seen in this recent attack. At the same time, you have to sort of ask the question, what would have been the impact of these weapons if they had been provided earlier? The counteroffensive has been raging all summer, and the Ukrainians have lost a lot of soldiers, a lot of equipment, and really they haven't advanced really in any significant way on the battlefield. They've taken tiny pieces of territory in the south and the east. And one of the big problems for Ukrainian forces has been Russian air superiority. And we're seeing how the ATACMS in this latest attack apparently have destroyed so many of these Russian attack helicopters. And you kind of ask, if Ukraine had got the weapons earlier, could the counteroffensive been way more successful?
Right. It's tough to kind of overstate how significant Ukrainians found this most recent attack that they were able to carry out. All right. Tom Sufi Burge, really helpful analysis here. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, put a little pepper in your step. One last thing is next.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
And one last thing. We live in a nation that loves chili peppers. We can't get enough of them. One of YouTube's fastest growing shows is called Hot Ones and just involves people giving interviews while choking down hotter and hotter hot sauces.
Okay, is this one bad? What do you mean? What do you mean by shaking it? What are you doing? What do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, this week, it was on Hot Ones, of all places, where we learned the world has a new plant officially deemed the planet's spiciest pepper.
Congratulations, you're officially amazing.
Let's make some noise.
A Guinness World Records official was on hand to give the title to Ed Curry, yes, that's his name, who's been crossbreeding peppers in North Carolina for years. In fact, he already held the record for a different pepper he made called Carolina Reaper. If you didn't know, spiciness has an actual measurement. They're called Scoville units. A bell pepper is 0 Scoville units, a jalapeno is 5,000, a habanero is 100,000. And a generation ago, that's pretty much where the scale ended, because a habanero pepper was the hottest on Earth. Then, guys like Ed started really exploring how to spice up your life. Carolina Reaper measures over 1 million Scoville units. Now his new pepper, called Pepper X, is 3 times spicier than that.
Oh. These guys are right now feeling there's an intense burn that happens immediately.
What does it taste like? Well, Curry, who claims his taste buds can handle basically anything now, says the first time he ate it, he had cramps for 3.5 hours. So why make this stuff? Well, one reason is because you can. Another is Curry was anticipating someone would break his record, and he wanted to have something to counter that with. Another reason, though, is when he released Carolina Reaper, he let people plant it and breed it for free. It was like open-source horticulture, resulting in thousands of recipes and products. This time he says, don't cry for me, I'm patenting my product. Although, if you did steal a bite of one of these, you wouldn't get very far until the heat caught up with you. Also, today I learned while researching this that the heat from peppers doesn't come from the seeds. It comes from the pith, that white part, the rib that holds the seeds. In gardening circles, that is called the placenta. I had to learn that, so now you do too, okay? Oh, if you were wondering, Brad, do you like spicy foods? My name is Brad Milky. Like, I keep milk nearby whenever I'm having something spicier than pico de gallo, so that should give you your answer. I'm out tomorrow, but I'll see you later this week.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.